21CL Radio. Hello, everybody. My name is Michael Bull, and welcome to the Education Vanguard. Great to have you here. Still continuing our focus a lot on virtual learning, and today I've got the head of an academy in Hong Kong. Stephen Deer is the head of Hong Kong Academy and a 7-week veteran of virtual schooling. Our discussion today left me with a much clearer pathway forward for my own new journey into virtual learning, and will hopefully give some ideas to all, regardless of where you are on the virtual learning journey. Enjoy the conversation. Steve Deer, thanks so much for joining me on the program today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
All right. So as the head of an international school in Hong Kong, you guys have been closed for about 7 weeks now. And I don't know, could you take me back to that moment you realized the school would be closed for some period of time? What were your first thoughts?
Well, my first thought was, why did they announce this on the first day of my holiday?
Oh, okay.
We had just commenced the Chinese New Year break. And for many of us, we'd already started to take our flights out of Hong Kong into different parts of the world. And in essence, we landed to find out that the Chinese New Year break would be extended for, at that time, for 2 weeks. So we had a mindset that we were preparing for online classes for about 2 weeks.
So, I mean, is it a scramble? I mean, the assumption that I guess I'm thinking is that you guys can't come back in those 2 weeks. So are people out and all over the place, making it even more difficult?
Well, that did make it difficult. There was some, obviously, there were some advantages because there was no classes that week. It actually gave the leadership team an opportunity to sit down and prepare for what was coming. So although we were spread far and wide, there were some people still on the campus, others over the different time zones. And that gave us a chance to start practicing our online meetings, and begin to start modeling some of these sorts of ideas. But it did give us a chance to think about what did we want to do going forwards for those 2 weeks. And in the meantime, we sent a letter out to the community confirming that the campus would be closed for 2 weeks. And that gave us a little bit of time to say, in 3 or 4 days' time, you'll receive a more comprehensive communication from the school outlining how all this is actually going to work from that first Monday back.
So what did that look like the first Monday back? And we'll have to ask, what's it look like now, 7 weeks later? But yeah, what were the initial phases looking like from a parent and a student point of view?
For us, the first thing was is that we wanted to make sure that we could get some time so that we could really think about what were realistic in terms of our expectations. And all this, although at that stage the campus was closed to the students, we were still able to bring faculty and staff onto the campus. So those first 2 days that we came back, we really set up some activities for the kids to do. It was, for want of a better word, it was more busy work as extension of things that had already been doing in the classrooms. So it was additional reading, finish off assignments. We set some activities whilst we could really strategize how we could sort of facilitate the continuity of the program. So the first Monday back was really getting people initiated with online programs. And then the second day, teachers began to start interacting with students to begin to set things out. And we ran it slightly differently for primary and secondary. For the primary school, in these last few weeks, we've posted all the learning in advance for the students, generally a week ahead. And the parents and the students have been able to review that information. And then day to day, the teachers have been touching base with the students, generally with the parents involved in this as well, 2 to 3 times a day. In the secondary school, we tried to make sure that we could run classes as if they were on campus, in essence, just running those online. But we offered 2 different services. One of those was really to run synchronously, where the kids could follow the learning in real time, and recognizing that some kids were in different time zones, others could actually work asynchronously, so they could switch on at whatever time, and then they could follow the recordings and the work assignments that had been set by the teachers.
So this sounds structured almost like you did it in advance.
Did
you come up with this idea in the beginning, this sort of structure, and just stuck with it, or did you have one and then you end up modifying it?
I think one thing to preface is that we have been fairly familiar with using technology at the school. We run a one-to-one mm-hmm. laptop program with the kids. Obviously, it's embedded within a lot of the learning that goes on. We even actually have some kids taking online courses in the grades 11 and 12. So there is a sense of familiarity. I would also say as well, with the political situation in Hong Kong and the subsequent closures that we had earlier in the year, it gave us a little bit of an opportunity for a week period to be able to start planning some of these ideas, although we hadn't really planned it to this level for this extended amount of time. So there was a sense of familiarity. We had already started working with the teachers, and the students knew how to access many of the programs. And what that allowed us to do was to know what structures we already had in place, what were the teachers comfortable with, what did we think the students could manage depending on their age levels, and that really allowed us to set realistic expectations. And that's been very helpful in this process, so that we can manage the expectations within the school and of the parents and the students at home.
So you have a process that's working for you. How do you know? What sort of mechanisms do you look for feedback? I'm guessing probably parent interaction that lets you know that you guys have a process that's going to work the best that it can.
Yes, different ranges of feedback. One of the things that we've found in this process is that unlike teachers working in a classroom where they have a great sense of familiarity about how to do things, they run, you know, automatically sometimes. There's sometimes you can sometimes miss out a step on feedback. Whereas now, because a lot of this is new, there's been a great deal of openness to check that kids understand things, to make sure that the learning is accessible. And in essence, it seems to have elevated the sense of vulnerability, that willingness to say, I don't have all of the answers. I want to check that I'm doing this the right way. And if we look at a positive out of this and something that we hope is sustainable, the way in which this has really elevated our partnerships. We've been asking questions. Is this working? How is this working? What would you like to learn next? And we've been getting very regular and quick feedback, which we've been able to make adjustments along the way. So that's really been helpful in this process. And also thinking about feedback to kids' assignments and work. There's three areas that we've really looked at. There's been a greater sense of self-assessment, teaching kids how to self-assess their work, thinking about questions that they might ask, particularly when they're in their single environment. We've done a lot more on peer assessments as well. So when we're actually bringing kids up on screens and trying to help them to take turns in listening and presenting ideas, really encouraging them to comment on each other's work in an open forum. And then obviously thinking about the way in which teachers can give meaningful feedback in an online environment.
I'm curious, you know, you probably had an expectation of how this was all going to go, but now, 7 weeks later, what surprised you the most about all of this that you just didn't expect would happen? That it could be a challenge or a victory, whatever.
Well, if we look at the sort of the process, in the very beginning stages, a lot of the focus was on about structures. Did you have the programs? How are we going to do this? And it was really, how do you facilitate that learning? As time has gone on, there's been a much greater shift emphasis on well-being. For teachers, for students, and also for parents who have found themselves, I think, a lot more involved in the learning process. So that some of those things have been a little surprising. And what we've actually found is that as a community, the sense of resilience that have come from people, particularly as the, I suppose, the end point keeps changing all of the time and the uncertainty, mm-hmm. just how well people come together as a community and how creative that they are to keep well-being going, keep the learning going, how they're trying to work with each other. And there's the self-efficacy that has come out of this has been really impressive.
I wonder, too, if there's a change in attitude. So if I am not from Hong Kong, I might have thought to myself early on, you know, I'm going to go back to my home country and just enroll my kids there. Now I'm like, oh, I don't have that choice. I think I'd rather hang out at Hong Kong Academy where they know what's going on and they're already far into it. Have you seen a change in tone because of that, these new realities?
We have actually seen some of that, particularly in the last couple of weeks. One of the things that we were really emphasizing was the sense of flexibility as much as we can, because when there's high emotions and you're trying to support a community and things are being done differently, as flexible as we can be, we felt was going to be as helpful, as well as keeping it manageable. And some parents did choose to take their children back to some public schools, say in the States, and enroll their children there. And we worked with families to basically say, if that's the choice that you wanted to make, you can choose to follow the online learning. What we will ask is, when you come back, we'll just ask for a brief report and update on the child's progress in that sort of context, and then we will work to reintegrate them back into things. What we're finding now, particularly as this has become a global pandemic, is that those families are coming straight back here now.
That was my next question, I can imagine.
Yes. And I suppose we have been, and I'm going to blow our own trumpet a little bit here. I think we've done a pretty good job of actually supporting families and students online under the circumstances. And that's put us well placed to continuity. Schools that are just starting on this journey now, well, where we were 7 weeks ago and where we are now, different places, but we're dealing with different things at the same time. You know, we are able to think about now what sort of things have been challenging for the kids, what's working well for you, and being able to adapt for those. And you can only really get that as a consequence of being involved in this.
So I want to ask you a question about workload, or just work in itself versus community. So I would imagine, at least in my frame of mind at the beginning, it's like, oh, how am I going to deliver the curriculum and make sure they do the work? Mm-hmm. And then I think as you go along, it might be like, well, how do I create a sense of community so we feel like we're in this together? Did you go through that sort of shift as well, that continuum?
Very much so. And I think that sense of working together has been very much a common theme. We communicate regularly with the community. So there's circulars that come out from me, also from the principals, and we're generally, I mean, daily from the teachers, but there it's just people keeping people connected. And we've also tried some very, very creative things. One of the things that we recognize is that whilst we could get the traditional academics covered through the online programs, it was much more difficult to do things like sports programs or some of the more practical things, or even parents, teacher, student conferences. So we ran a virtual sports day, for example, which went down very, very well. It's really been something that's brought the community together. And, you know, we've published quite a lot on this, but it was just really the creativity thinking, we need to ensure that we recognize balance of curriculum is something that we would offer to the kids in school. And we need to think about ways of doing this. And in essence, you don't have to have all the answers. People come up with great ideas. So we set up a studio in the school. It was like more like an ESPN or a sports center, where a few of the teachers would begin to demonstrate events for the kids. Kids would then go and do these things at home. They would send in videos or scores. And then the teachers would talk about, you know, what they'd observed on the videos, ways in which you could actually improve things. And it was a really good fun for the kids and for the community. Last week we ran, we have a coffee house that we run twice a year. It's where kids can deliver poetry, they can sing songs, they can work in bands. And once again, we got kids to make these things at home, we put them together, and then it was projected out to the community online. And we know that this is working because we get constant feedback from the families being thankful of feeling connected to the school, even under these circumstances. We've run online parent, teacher, student conferences for the first time. We weren't quite sure about how that would work. And in fact, the feedback from the parents was very good. They would say, we've got all of the information, we've connected with the teachers. And in some sense, there's been advantages because there's no wait time, or you don't have to travel to and from the school. And I can sit with my child and speak with the teacher. And what it's making us realize is that there are other ways to do things, and they can be really successful on these online platforms. And I do believe that when we move beyond this, that there is a great opportunity to actually enhance learning in the classrooms because of the experience that we've had.
Yeah, I know you wanted to talk about lessons learned in the long term after you returned to school, and you brought that up right now. Do you have some of those lessons now that you think, say, you start back in the fall and you're back or all face to face, you thought these are the three things I want to make sure that we now take to heart. Do you have some of those?
Yeah, one of those I would say we've already touched upon is that sense of being open to feedback. Mm-hmm. And what it has taught us in this piece is that elevating the voice of the community and giving them an opportunity and setting the expectation that please tell us how this is working, publishing what they've said, and then being able to say these are the adjustments we've made is a great way to continue to build community. And that's one thing that I very much hope will continue as we get back into the classrooms. The second thing I think is has been a real revelation for us is that sense of inclusivity in a classroom setting. Classroom settings are often very much favorable to the most verbal students. You know, they have lots to say. They're the ones that can often sort of like lead the dynamics within a classroom setting. What we found as an online platform is that when teachers are asking questions, there's been a greater sense of pausing and giving kids processing time. And then not just people speaking, but people writing things online. And some of the teachers have actually commented that this has actually engaged a larger group of kids in the process. And wouldn't it be nice when we come back that we actually continue to have those discussions and those conversations, and that we offer an online platform where kids can choose which they feel most comfortable with? Some children prefer the anonymity of being behind a screen.
Sure.
They definitely want to participate, and this gives them permission and it gives them a frame in which they can actually do that. And the third thing that I would say is, what this is really teaching us a lot about is kids' independence and giving kids choices. One of the things that kids have come back and have said that in terms of some of the positives and what's working well for them is the choice they have about when they want to learn, how they want to learn. And in some sense, it's helped them utilize their time better. Sometimes we get very anchored in, you need to learn this, you need to do it by this time. And giving kids choice, giving them an opportunity to plan their day in the way they want to, hopefully will be something that carries forward. What we do know is that people are desperate to go back to sort of normalcy, going back into the classrooms, what they're familiar with. And this won't happen if we just assume, oh, well, we learned all these lessons and now let's just go back to the classrooms. We're going to have to think really carefully about how we continue to elevate these learnings and the ways in which we frame it in the classrooms. Otherwise, these things will get lost very, very quickly.
Yeah, those are good points. I wonder, too, as far as the teacher's workload. I'm a middle school teacher, and middle school students are kind of designed for this. You know, they're ready to go on their laptop.
Yeah.
But what about like an elementary school teacher, middle school, high school teacher? Which group do you think has it the hardest? Or am I asking you the question like, which child do you love the most?
Well, I'm an early childhood teacher by trade, so I think it's different for different students. One of the things that we found with the very early childhood education, this has been more challenging for us. It's involved a lot more parents' participation. And as if ever you worked with 3 or 4 year olds, you know it's a very physically demanding piece. And I think it remains so on online. What the teachers have really tried to do is just keep the connectivity, talking to the kids, reading to the kids, even sort of like doing lots of presentations and keeping it fun and upbeat so that the kids have that sense of connection. With the older kids, there has been a sort of a greater sense of independence. But I would say universally, this is tough for teachers. This is learning to be a teacher again. Teachers, some of them have described it as like being on teaching practice again. And we know how long we work late into the night to plan everything just so. And this is all new territory. So not only are they trying to actually provide access to learning, they themselves are learning the best tools, the best technology in which to do this, and a lot of experimentation. And I would probably say teachers are pretty exhausted right now. But the effort and the way in which they are going about this, from my perspective, is commendable.
So they're exhausted even in week 7.
Yes. This is not going to let up, because everything continues to be so new. Nothing is static in this process, and we're dealing with different things all the time.
Steve, I'd like to finish up here with, you had a focus in the beginning, which is probably just creating something to get things going. Mm-hmm. But 7 weeks in, could you let us know, like, what are you thinking about now? What are you focusing on now?
A lot of work is going on to well-being and trying to ensure that there is breadth of curriculum. And, you know, some of the things that the kids have articulated in terms of what's challenging for them is they are missing things like their social life, their sports, their after-school activities. So that is ways in which we can try and supplement that in the best form that we can, even if it's reminding kids to take a break, go out there and do things. You know, some kids have said this is less enjoyable than school. And so we're really having to keep this humorous and upbeat. And, you know, many of the things that we're being asked to do now really run counter to what we are as social human beings. Don't touch your face. Don't touch your nose. Don't shake hands. And it's just trying to find fun ways of reminding ourselves of that being social and being connected is really, really important. And finally, I would say is that, you know, we can never take for granted that this isn't challenging for everyone. And, you know, when people feel overwhelmed, whether it's parents, teachers or students, reminding them to ask for help and making sure that we provide the structures, whether it's videos to show how people how to do things, making sure you can connect with a person and making it okay to say this is really tough, and accepting of that and feeling comfortable to share that with people. So we've run some parent groups where we've tried to get people to come together online so that they can talk about the experience themselves, how they can support each other. And that is helping. And I think we're going to see more of this as we go forward for the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Steve, thank you so much for all your information. I know there's going to be a ton of people out there enjoying and listening to what you have to say. It's given a great roadmap. I mean, I could just speaking for myself, for many of us that are just entering this phase, and or ideas for those of us who've been on the path already.
Thank you very much. And I'd say good luck. And the last thing I would say is it's amazing how resourceful people are in these situations. And you find yourself doing things you couldn't have imagined in a very short space of time.
And that's the kind of thing we certainly want to hear. So that's good news. This interview was brought to you by 21st Century Learning International. Find us on the web at 21clradio.com.